Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tattered Cover Bookstore. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for supporting your local independent booksellers, and in this case, a local author as well. Tonight, I am pleased to introduce Rick Riley as he presents and signs his latest work, Sports from Hell. Rick is an award-winning New York Times best-selling sports writer who has written for magazines, websites, as well as publishing several books, including Hate Mail from Cheerleaders and Who's Your Caddy? In tonight's book, we are taken on a worldwide tour of craziness in search of the world's dumbest sport. The tour is often mind-boggling and incredibly hilarious, with stops to see sports like chess boxing, bull poker, and ferret legging, to name just a few of the more exotic-sounding ones. Personally, I've been looking forward to hearing about these stories from a first-hand perspective. So without further ado, please join me in a warm welcome for Rick Riley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll give you a first-hand perspective. I got a ferret out in the car. Okay, well, thank you all for coming. I'm sorry it's snowing. Although anybody that leaves early will be tasered. So, any books you buy, we're glad to sign, and then take them to your cashier as Jake Plummer. He got a little side job here. Today's George Carl's birthday. I don't know if anybody knows that. George Carl's birthday today. And I don't know if you saw this piece I did with him on ESPN TV. And the best part, they kind of cut out. And I said, we were watching the game, and Utah Nuggets were playing terrible, and he's sitting in his living room. You know, he's recovering from cancer radiation treatments. And J.R. Smith, this mercurial, idiotic guard we have, did something incredibly stupid, just amazingly stupid. And I said, is it harder to sit here and coach J.R. from your lazy boy, or is it harder to be on the bench? He goes, it's way harder here. And I said, why? And he, of course, he doesn't talk that loud. You can barely hear him. And he goes, because when I'm at least when I'm there on the bench, I can pull him out of the game and go, JR, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, we took it out. I'd also like to mourn just a minute if Nebraska leaves the Big 12. Have you heard this? Nebraska might leave the Big 12. What are we going to do? I mean, I taught my kids, you know, Nebraska's our hated rival. I taught our kids when you go number two, flush and say, see you in Lincoln. We used to teach them the Nebraska fight song, which was, there is no place like Nebraska, thank God. Now what will we do? I'll just shrivel up and die with no Nebraska to hate. So I don't know. I mean, Baylor's not going to be quite the same. And then I thought it was interesting, Tiger has this injury, the bulging disc. Of all the things I thought would be bulging on Tiger Woods, I really never dreamed it would be his disc. But anyway, this book was really a great departure from the same old sports I've been covering for 30 years. As I said today, how many Brett Favre retirement press conferences can you go to? You just get sick of it. So I had this idea to go to every crazy sport I've never covered, and my researcher, who's here tonight, Cynthia, would you stand and say hello to everyone? This is my researcher. And she found a lot of these sports, most of them, in fact. And some of them I really wish she hadn't found. One of our rules was it couldn't be dumb just for the sake of being dumb. Like, we weren't going to go to shin kicking, phone throwing, cow chip tossing, wife carrying, cheese rolling, or bog snorkeling, which are all just things to make people come to their tiny village in the ham, you know, in Switzerland. These had to be so dumb that they didn't know they were dumb. Yes.
I am space.
You are Swiss. don't you have like cow rolling or something there?
I'll make you all
These are sports that the people don't realize they're dumb. The only doping is to see how dopey these people are, right? So the first thing she got me involved in, and this was really bad, the World Sauna Championships. I don't know if any of you have ever been to this. It's in Finland. It's nationally televised. And this, I thought it would be 120 degrees. It was 261 degrees. The winner, the great Timo, arrived in a Winnebago with not one but two saunas in it. He's a professional sauna sitter. And he went 12 minutes, 26 seconds at 261 degrees, which, as I found out later, is the exact recipe for baked ziti. And I thought I'd be really cool. I'd go in there. I was going to psych out the other saunists, you know, because I was entered in this thing. And I was going to go in there with a hot coffee and a Winston. Hey, turn this bitch on. What's the problem? Huh? And I got a covered dish in here. Whatever. But in fact, the heat just hits you like a runaway Prius. And every cell in your body just wants to run screaming out of this sauna. But you have to stay because you need the stupid chapter. And anyway, it's televised nationally. And Finnish people are cheering for the Finns with chants. And I'm like, what possibly could be a Finnish sauna chant, you know? And the only thing I could think of was, Stan, he's our man. He won't sweat. He has no glands. I don't know. We thought this up. And so you'd think sitting there, so we sat and watched the first heat. So we watched the first heat, and you wouldn't believe how fun it is to watch people literally melt in a sauna. Because, you know, water boils at 211 degrees or something? You're the teacher, 212, I don't know. We thought we were going to be really bored, but it is fascinating to watch people melt in a sauna. So I was just going to share a little bit, as much as I think reading myself is like having lunch, throwing it up, and eating again. I will still try to do this. How bored must you be to watch people sweat? Actually, you'd be amazed at how much fun it is to watch a grown man come apart like a $9 Walgreens sweater. How often you get to see a man go from normal to nuttier than Ross Perot in less than 10 minutes. We watched a Belarusian, for instance, dissolve for our amusement. He started out sane, just sitting there, minding his own business, but every 30 seconds, a pitiless stream of water came out from a ceiling shower in the center of the sauna and splashed on the molten hot rocks, creating 100% humidity in the room that would melt gold. About 2 minutes in, our man started rocking a little back and forth. At three, his eyes started blinking oddly. At 4 minutes, he began twitching. At five, his eyes got huge. At six, he started swallowing each breath like a bowl full of hot soup. Then he started glancing wildly around the sauna, as if to say to the others, "Are you mad? Don't you see what's happening here? They've locked us in a crock pot." He started madly wiping his eyes and mouth. He reached his hands out to his thighs to rub them, which is illegal, and you're immediately disqualified if you do that. But then he realized he couldn't stop himself. Then he did it anyway, crazily, wildly, like he was covered in lice. The judges flagged him once, then twice, and yet he would not stop rubbing his body. Then suddenly he lurched for the door, and he was out, and sanity and cool air whooshed back into his brain, and suddenly he was normal and smiling again. Kind of like watching Tom Cruise be interviewed. The cover picture is the moment when a ferret is going down my pants for the first time. I don't know yet. Some people know my past. The thing about ferret legging is it began in Wales, and the idea was to see who could stand it the longest. They used to keep ferrets in their pants to keep them warm when they hunted, but they wore very long wool underwear, and then the ferret, and then the pants, and they'd keep them in there, and then the ferret would chase the rabbit out of the hole. Well, that became illegal in Wales, but drunk guys in Wales started betting each other in bars that they could put them down their pants without the underwear, and soon they were, you know, crying but trying to outlast the other guy, and somehow this passed for a sport in Wales. Though the all-time winner, 1972, the world record was set. This guy named Reg Mellor, who went 5 hours and 32 minutes. There's now some controversy that the ferret may have been dead before it went in. I don't know. The thing about ferrets is they're meat eaters. which is scary. And they're also very hard of seeing. They don't see well. So essentially, you're putting a blind carnivore in your pants, which is what my researcher sent me to do. But better than that, they send bios on these ferrets. They're so into this. It's like they're NBA players. And you. So I said to her, really? They send bios? And she said, oh, yes. They have a whole list of the 30 ferrets who participate. And this was Richmond, Virginia. Most of it's done in Europe. And well, could I see a bio? And so she sent me the bio. And so I'm going to read you now the bio of Pepe. Pepe, each bio arrived with a photo and a paragraph or two on the celebrity competitive ferret. Here is an actual ferret bio that she sent. Pepe was surrendered to the Richmond Ferret Rescue League approximately 6 months ago. He is a white, crimson-eyed male who runs faster in reverse than drive. He is suspected to be deaf, but this doesn't slow him down. This is his first year participating in the ferret legging. So this is me talking now. The mind nearly blows a gasket at all the questions this one single paragraph sends ricocheting around the noggin. For instance, what does that mean, surrendered? Was Pepe involved in some kind of police ferret standoff? And why is Pepe only suspected of being deaf? Couldn't you simply smash two cymbals next to his ears and see if Pepe jumps? Or is the fear of that very reaction exactly why he's still only suspected? And my God, if Pepe really is deaf and he is my ferret in my pants, does that mean he can't hear my screaming? And why, for the love of Christ, does he go faster backwards? What kind of hideous hell beast is this? And crimson eyes? Whose ferret was it? Charles Manson's? So I lasted 3 minutes with the ferret legging. The lady next to me, one lady, just got chewed alive like a carnival turkey leg. And we had to take her to the, it was at a carnival, we had to take her to the EMTs. And they were quite shocked and couldn't imagine how a ferret got down her pants. But the one lady across from her, I said, how was it for you? And she says, she was a middle-aged woman. And she goes, I haven't had that much action in my pants in 22 years. So that was a fun one. We did a sport called bull poker. And, you know, the researcher and I, there's only a couple places they do it in the country. They do this in Indian reservation rodeos and also penitentiaries of this country. So we had to go to Angola, Louisiana, to the penitentiary. And when my researcher walked through the exercise yard, you could literally hear 573 necks snap. Because not only had they not seen a woman, but they hadn't seen a woman, you know, curvier than Lombard Street walk through. And so as I said, well, at least you're keeping the prison chiropractor in business. Bull poker is really kind of stupid. You sit at a poker table, and four guys play poker, and you're in the middle of a rodeo ring, and there's $250 in the middle, but the cards don't matter at all. Cards are to bull poker what plot is to porn. Doesn't matter at all, because the whole game is we're going to release a 2,000-pound bull who will fly at you like a ram pickup, and he is going to slam the table, as all bulls will do eventually. The last guy to leave your chair, the last guy to leave his chair gets the money. I kid you not. And, you know, of course, the guys didn't leave their chair, which I'm going to describe. But I asked them, why wouldn't you leave your chair? And they're all in for murder. Three of the four were in for murder. And they were all lifers. And the guy said, food's better in the prison hospital. So they all got blown up, and I'm so glad I didn't have to do that. But the warden of this prison was really a crazy character, and he insisted on showing us the lethal injection chamber, which I don't know why I want to read this passage to you, but it's he's killed quite a few men in his lethal injection chamber, and he was quite proud of it, so he wanted us to show it to us. He took us into Angola's lethal injection chamber. Death was so present in that room, on you like a fog, that it immediately brought up the lunch you had an hour ago. It was a cinder block room, maybe 10 feet by 15 feet, with the killing table laid out like a crucifix. There were six belts up and down the length of the table, and more belts for the arms and hands. There was even a small pillow for the man's head. After all, what if he gets a stiff neck? There was a little square hole that led into another room where the doctors dispensed the sodium thiopental. This way, they don't have to see the man they're killing. Quote, it takes about a minute and a half for the drugs to kill the man, the warden said. They usually take two breaths and they're gone, and then it's another 4 minutes for the heart to stop. But sometimes they'll surprise you. One old boy took two breaths and we thought he was dead. And then, all of a sudden, he rose up and he said, wow! The warden said he holds their hand during the whole process. Of course, now, if it was an electric chair, I wouldn't do that. Once the juice is flowing, he tells the man that he has about 90 seconds left and would he like to say one last thing. I asked him, what has he heard people say? He said, well, one old boy said, hey, would you tell my lawyer he's fired? Nothing like some lethal injection humor at a book signing. We did a thing, called 3 Mile Golf, which is a one hole that starts at the top of a mountain in New Mexico. You go straight down 8,000 feet, and I mean the first shot you hit must go 800 yards. It's like you just went to the Barry Bonds pharmacy. It just goes and goes. But then it's 5 hours, it took me 5 hours and 22 minutes, and you go to a 50-foot hole. The hole is about the size of this room, which is, you know, hard for even me to three-putt. You just hit a little wedge in there. So I shot a 19, and the last journalist that did it got helicoptered off, a Swiss journalist. The poor guy was helicoptered off because it's straight down, and you have to be used to the mountains, although you'd think he'd be used to the mountains. But I finished second place, and these people do it every year, and they're quite serious about it. And they said they have this little thing they give you. If I'd have done 18 holes at that pace, I'd have shot 342, and it said I would have taken 5 days, 11 hours, and 13 minutes. And I said, or a round with Charles Barkley. Anyway, we went to Toronto for the Rock, Paper, Scissors Championship, which was, I know that sounds ridiculous, but they do have them, and the first place is $50,000. And they take this very seriously. In the lobby, as we were going in, there was a guy doing rock lunges. He was warming up for rocks. He says, they're the hardest. One guy had his hand, had his arm in a sling. He goes, I'm not sure I can go tonight. I'm not sure I can go. I don't know, he's going to make the big Willis Reed comeback at the left-handed, you know. But one guy was walking around with oven mitts. We're like, what's with the oven mitts? He goes, my hands are just that hot. It's like a whole psych-out game. In the end, though, I got through, three rounds, and then I was defeated, I think, in the third or fourth round or something by a waitress who was higher than Timothy Leary. And so I thought she had no idea what she was doing. And just as I'm about to play this woman in the fourth round, a guy comes up to me and says, dude, she never throws rock. Seriously, my buddy just lost to her. She never throws rock. You can throw all the scissors you want, right? So I throw scissors, scissors, scissors. I'm out like that. All she does is throw frickin' rock. And I can't find the guy. So I go and I find the president of the Rock, Paper, Scissors World Society, something or other. I'm like, the guy gave me a totally bad tip. She did throw rock. And he goes, dude, you got taken by the second. I'm like, what's the second? Well, it's a con job. Have you never been to the Rock, Paper, Scissors World Champion? No? Well, that's the oldest con in the book. The second comes up, plays you, now she's going to go tell somebody else and help him along. And so they're a bunch of bastards. I joined a women's pro football team in Orange County, California. And women pro football players are really quite good. That team went on to win the World Championship of Women's Pro Football. The difference is they have to pay to play. They don't get any money. They pay $500 each. But there's a lot of things that are the same. For instance, in the locker room getting dressed, although they didn't dress in the locker room because they couldn't afford it, so we were just in the parking lot, they say a lot of the same things I've heard in the Broncos locker room. For instance, dude, don't forget to take off your earrings. Heard that. And also, oh, yeah, I'd do her. So I was immediately introduced to that team in a drill called the Oklahoma drill, in which you have to carry the ball and you have to get past two linemen, and there's only 4 yards wide to get by. If anybody played high school or college football, this is what you do. And they get to smash you, and you try to get through them. And these two Polynesian sisters, one was 260 pounds, the other was 270 pounds, Leilani and Kilani, I think. They were sisters. And they hit me so hard, my cleats went up in the air. A shot of slobber came out of my nose. I was crushed. The air came out of my lungs. I was looking up through the ear hole in my helmet when Kilani whispered into my helmet, "Not your idea of a threesome, I'll bet." These are all true. And then after the second day, I had to go to the chiropractor and was never allowed to play again. But a lot of these ended up in the, for instance, one guy, I remember at the sauna thing, he comes out, I went 4 minutes, he goes 8 minutes, he comes out and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, "Dude, did you breathe through your nose?" He goes, yeah, I heard you're supposed to breathe through your nose. And I'm like, "All your skin is gone from under your nose." He's like, "Holy shit." And we go to the mirror, and it's all kind of, "Dude, your ear is split in half." His ear had split in half. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, your back. It looks like a pizza that was left in too long, and it was all bubbled." And then we started looking at his whole body, and it was like kind of a pus convention. And we had to take him to the hospital. The guy was four hours in the hospital putting on second skin. And it's no wonder. I mean, you're literally a chicken breast on a grill for too long. Anyway, I don't know why I brought that up. But she found this really incredibly stupid thing. It's a sport even John Daly and Courtney Love's offspring couldn't dream up. It's called chess boxing. And we had to fly to England. They do it in Poland, not in Switzerland. But they box. And so they box, right, 3 minutes. Then a little guy brings in a waterproof chessboard and two chairs. And the little guy takes off their two right-handed gloves. And now they play speed chess for 4 minutes. And now quickly back to the boxing and back to the chess. I'm like, this is the stupidest sport I've ever seen. And the guy who's showing me, he's like, "Oh no, boxing and chess have a lot in common. You know, planning out moves, jab, jab, cross, jab, you know, setting the guy up. And same with chess, you know, you're setting the guy up." I'm like, "No, they have nothing in common except both chess players and boxers do not have sex before a match, but chess players don't have it afterwards either." He's like, "Well," you know, he had no answer for that. But it was so stupid. So now by the eighth round, they're bleeding on the board, and they're trying to wipe the sweat out of their eyes, and they can't even see the pieces. And then they're terrible boxers, so they're just getting smashed in the temple and about the face and shoulders. And now they can't even remember how the pieces move. Like, I saw one guy take a knight and go, you know, six diagonally, six. And the ref's like, no, we're done here. We're done. So that easily was the dumbest sport we covered. I included just to piss off baseball fans because, you know, I like baseball, but they all take themselves so seriously. Everybody's George Will. You know, it's all a lovely catch between father and son. And, you know, so I put baseball in here. It was my favorite thing of the whole book. You know, bull poker, chess boxing, baseball. I just wanted that to be on the back cover. And people are like, "Why'd you put in baseball?" And I'm like, any sport that puts 65-year-old men in uniform that are 50 pounds overweight is a dumb sport. Any sport that's so slow you need a seventh-inning stretch because you're sleepy is a stupid sport. Any sport where Ken Griffey falls asleep in the clubhouse and is not ready. Did you see that 2 days ago? He was not ready to bat. He was asleep in the clubhouse. And I can't blame him. Keith Hernandez, the New York Met broadcaster, fell asleep doing the game. He's doing the game. Yankee games are now 3 hours and 36 minutes, almost entirely, because guys like Derek Jeter look at a pitch, get out, adjust their helmet, redo their Velcro, do their belt, readjust their cup in ridiculous amount of times, knock dirt off their cleats that isn't even there, and they haven't even swung the bat. I mean, relief pitchers are pitching for 10 minutes in the bullpen, call them in, and they take 4 minutes walking to the stupid mound, then they get 8 free more pitches. Does that happen in the NFL? Does a kicker get to 8 kicks before he gets to kick? Does a 3-point shooter? No! Get him in there. So I just think baseball is the stupidest sport of all because so many people watch it. So that's, you know, expounded mathematically. And, you know, any sport that leaves Barry Bonds' record in is really dumb. At least they can do with Bonds, McGuire, all these guys. If you're going to leave the record in, don't put an asterisk next. I'm not for asterisks. I'm for little tiny syringes. We did a sport in Australia. Well, Cynthia, the researcher, didn't do the sport because it's called nude bicycle racing. And we went to Sydney, Australia for this. And I do know you can learn from my mistakes, the nude biking. Do not rent your bike. All right? At least bring your own saddle. All right? Don't rent your bike. And also, a lot of these guys, they're really just showing off. They have no interest in biking or racing. They just want to remind the world how blessed by God they were. Really. They're kind of like, dude, it's not going to catch in my chain, is it? No, it's not going to catch in your chain. Just ride. God. Rub it in. I felt it necessary to tell you why the researcher, Cynthia, left as the people started showing up for the nude bike. It was actually a biketivism activity. The idea was, we're going to ride nude because you don't see us when you just almost hit us all the time. Bike riders here in Australia have no rights. Maybe if we're nude, you'll finally see us because we feel invisible, right? So it was like a protest thing. So as Cynthia and I stood there waiting to see who would show up for this protest nude bike race, here's what I wrote. But as we waited, people began showing up. Odd, unwashed, sleeping in refrigerator boxes people. An old dirty man rode up, his entire life needing a shave. Wearing pants that clearly were not originally his. The waist was so big on him that he had to double them over and cinch them with a belt. The fly was permanently down, as was the brim of his bucket hat. He had shoes with no laces in them and a very stained white shirt. He was either homeless or a flasher. He did not seem like an ardent bicycle rights activist, if you asked me. Three guys from Newcastle, Australia, showed up on bikes, although they were all smoking and looked like they wouldn't make it past the first hill, much less the first cop chase, because at these things, occasionally cops chase you, and you have to go riding through neighborhoods and stuff. They wouldn't make it past at least the first cop chase, but at least they had experience with it, unlike myself. They'd done it the year before in Newcastle. Quote, after the race, they had a big party, and everybody stood around naked cooking sausages, said one of the three men, a bristly man with one eye. Among the things I'd be willing to do naked, grilling sausages over open flames is not one of them. Also, while we were down there, we did zorbing in New Zealand. The great thing about New Zealand, you gotta go, because they have every stupid way to kill yourself you can have, because you cannot sue for personal injury in New Zealand. So they have you bungee jumping from helicopters over waterfalls and ridiculously stupid things. But we did a thing called zorbing. Have you seen this? It was in a Chevrolet truck ad. It's the only time I've seen it on television in the United States. But what you do is, the researcher and I got in a 12-foot plastic ball. And you climb through this. They kind of shove you through this little birthing canal of this ball. And then they throw a gallon of water in. And then they zip it shut, right? And then they say, okay, stand up. Now begin. You're at the top of a ski slope, mind you. You're at the top of a ski slope in a 12-foot plastic ball. And they go, okay, begin walking forward. And I'm like, no. I don't want to walk forward. Yes, you must walk forward to zorb. Don't want to walk forward. He starts pushing us. Please walk forward. You're essentially walking off a cliff in this ball. And we did. We walked forward and we went down a ski slope. And it was hilarious, fun, but really dangerous. But it was great. And the great thing about people like some, like, oh, I said, do people get hurt doing this? Oh, every now and then someone will break a femur or a tibia. And I said, well, what do you do in that situation? And he said, oh, they get 2 free passes. That's sorbing for you. You know, of course, a couple of my sons are here, and they talked me into doing a chapter on drinking games, because they're very, very good at drinking games, and I'd like to point them out. Kellen in the back, wave to the people, and Jake, right here in the middle, just back from bartending in Argentina for a year. Why I spent $140,000 on college education to bartend in Argentina, I don't know. No, you'll be great. So anyway, as a bartender and a frequent connoisseur of drinking games, they talked me into writing about drinking games. And one of them they play is Weakest Bladder. Have you ever played this game? Do you know this game? Well, you get in a bar, and they lock the door, and 100 people, 50 people, whatever, and all the drinks are free. Drinks are free until somebody pees. Right? That's the game, right? And so people are like, you can do it. Seriously, Amber. Amber, God damn it. Hang on, Amber, hang on. And then, Charlie, I told you, Flomax. Take your Flomax. And anyway, so then whoever pees, and then they're like, you idiot. So now everybody has to pay full price. There's a game that Jake talked to me about. Kellen told me this, about a game called Eat Shit. And you have to bounce quarters into a pitcher of something or whatever. And if you don't do it right, you must assume the push-up position and eat something off the guy's dorm room floor. Or maybe it's a college apartment floor. And that's really gross. And so I was telling, I asked Jake, have you ever had to eat something off of someone's floor? And he goes, oh, yeah, I've done that all the time. I said, so you're not good at the game? And he goes, what game? So, and they played in a hilarious beer pong. They played in the Beer Pong World Championships, which is essentially 500 sweaty college guys just making this ballroom at the Flamingo in Las Vegas smell like your basement did when all your son's buddies were there. But they did great, and they almost made it to the final round, but they didn't, thank God. And at the end, Kellen said, I'm kind of glad, Dad. I got to tell you, I'm just sick of beer. You know, and you think in your life of sentences you never thought you'd hear. For instance, like sentences that have never been uttered in the English language, like, please give me a paper cut in my eye. Shaq, you shoot the technical foul. Things like that. So, So he was sick of beer. I couldn't believe it. But the most ridiculous one happened very close to our house in Hermosa Beach, California. It's called the Iron Man, but we call it the de facto world target vomiting championships. And what you do is you run a mile along the beach, then you paddle your surfboard a mile, then you come back and drink 1 6-pack of warm beer as fast as you can. And The real pros eat a lot of food coloring first and some sprinkles so that their hurl, which is coming very soon, has the appearance and texture of a rainbow. And some of the really best ones will eat peanut butter and honey so that when the rainbow hits them, it will stick. And so, yes, I'm glad you've all eaten dinner. I hope you have. So I'll just read you a short passage from what became known as the Hermosa Beach Olympics. When the first great beach wretch happened, it was a young, skinny Asian guy. The volume, the power, and the arc of his heave were chilling to behold. It went at least 10 feet and yet never got wider than 8 inches around. It resembled a New York City fire hydrant let loose. If I'm lying, I'll let him entertain at my daughter's wedding. It was a bit like witnessing a space launch or some kind of Hollywood special effect. There is no way a human could project the contents of his stomach with such astounding violence and yet, dare I say it, beauty. Were we in Salem, Massachusetts in the 1600s, he'd have been burned as a witch. Oh my God, Cynthia said, mouth open. I advised her to keep it closed, lest he do it again. And in fact, I was having great, they could like, oh, guy with a toupee, I'm going to hit him in his left ear. And the guy would be like, from me to you, and it's whack. And it was incredible to behold. And I thought it was hilarious, and I was making notes until I realized I could be next. And at that moment, a man did a quite spectacular impression of a Rainbird sprinkler head, and he just did a perfect circle and just painted me with this blue and green thing. And as I was running to the beach, I realized it was exactly, it didn't have an odor or anything. It was exactly like a baby, only 180 pounds and soon to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a great time with jarts. Jarts are illegal now. 6,100 injuries in the time they were on the market, and that was only 7 years. So they're illegal to make or sell or I think even play. But this one group of guys in Piqua, Ohio, have cornered the market on all the America's jarts, and they have once a year this underground jarts tournament. And it took Cynthia a year to get us in the tournament because they were sure we were FBI. And you get there, and they're like a bunch of white accountants, you know, being real gangbangery, you know, with their jarts, you know. And it was great fun. And I think I have a passage here. I'll just tell you. The guy, we all had to sign a waiver that we wouldn't sue no matter what happened because there have been, you know, 10 or 12 jart deaths over the years. And in fact, I had a bunch of new slogans for their tournament next year, but they didn't seem to like them, which is one should be, because they always had a T-shirt, and I wanted them to have, "Jarts, they get under your skin." And another protest shirt, which said, "Jarts don't kill people. People kill people occasionally with jarts." Anyway. And, so anyway, we had this tournament. So I had to sign this waiver, right? But Cynthia, the researcher, did not sign the waiver. And I was in the backyard of this beautiful house, of this rich guy's house in Piqua, Ohio. And Cynthia was taking pictures for the book and didn't see a jart, and it landed square right through her ankle. And it was and the guy's like, "Oh, well, good thing you signed the waiver." And I said, "No, she didn't sign the waiver." And the same guy who was in charge and whose house it was wins the tournament. And it was, you know, some prize money and free jarts or I don't know what it was. And he's walking around like he's just won the NBA championship. He's like, "This is my house. Yeah, this is my house." And I'm like, "Well, actually, once Cynthia perfects her limp, it will be her house." The most amazing one we did was called Homeless Soccer, which was in Denmark. And when she brought it to me, I thought, okay, this has got to be a joke. It was called the World Cup of Homeless Soccer. And I'm like, okay, even if these homeless people win the World Cup, where will they put it? Secondly, how do you find your best homeless soccer players? I mean, do you look under bridges? Hey, wake up. Let's see your bicycle kick. I don't know. It was the stupidest idea I've ever heard of. 48 countries bring their best homeless soccer players. Last year was Cape Town. The year we did it, it was Denmark. And so we get there, and I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. But actually, it was the coolest because we met people who really were homeless, quite often addicted to drugs. We met an Irish kid from Dublin who was 17 years old and addicted to heroin. But he was loving the experience. And I said, "Why?" He said, "I'll tell you." His dad had died at 11, and his mom had left at 13, and he just lived on the streets and got hooked on heroin. He said, "All my life, people have crossed the street to avoid me." He says, "Now they're coming up, and they're wanting my autograph." Says they're wanting my picture. That was incredible alone. 92% of the people who participate in this sport, you think it's a big waste of money. In fact, it's the best way to help homeless people because for once they come out of it thinking they have something to offer, thinking that they now know what it's like to be part of a team. And that's the one thing we discovered in this book was that sports, the great thing we all love about it is that we get outside ourselves. We're part of a team. We lose our troubles for a while, and we actually connect with each other. I always think the reason sports is so big in this country is because, you know, a dad can talk to his kid, maybe only about sports, maybe only about the Red Sox. My favorite thing is when I get a column and they say, "You know, we buried that column with Grandma because she loved it so much." Or, "It hangs behind my desk." Or, "It was the first time I've been able to talk to my daughter in 5 years. We were able to talk at least about that." So there was two great things that came out of this book. One is quite often, with almost all these sports, I was the dumb one. I was the one who turned out to be dumb in that I forgot that no matter what sport you're doing, it's still your passion. It's every bit as much of it, this guy's passion to box someone and then play chess as it is Brett Favre to play football. And the other great thing that came out of it was I married the researcher. So thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Foden. We have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.